Welcome once again to the Agents Angle as we take another look into the news, trends and issues affecting the football agents industry around the world. I'm Jonathan Booker.
And I'm Peter Palaiologos. On this episode of the Agents Angle, we examine which agents and agencies are reported to have the greatest influence on clubs in two of football's biggest competitions.
We also ask the question whether a note on the FIFA Agents platform is more of an admission rather than an omission, whilst we are also taking a look at how agents and intermediaries now feature heavily in one of the most successful football computer games of all time.
In addition to that, we have an interview with a licensed football agent and lawyer from Japan. All that to come on this episode of The Agent's Angle.
Here we are, Peter, still waiting for the Rule K ruling over the football agent regulations in England. And I have heard rumours from both camps as to how they think it has gone. But not to breach any confidences, I will say no more than both camps are confident in some ways, but not so confident in others. So hopefully there will be a sensible ruling, as I think it will have a broader impact on the agents' world and the industry as a whole, beyond just England and the UK, in terms of agent regulations and the FFAR.
I agree, Jonathan. This is an important decision for agents, not just in the United Kingdom, but worldwide. From the agent's perspective, the English Premier League and the Championship and all the other leagues are seen as top leagues to get players in still. So this decision is important from that aspect, from an agent's view, but also on commissions and fees, which is a big issue across the board, and how the Rule K arbitration will affect that part of the regulations.
Yeah, so much to consider. And you're quite right. It goes beyond the cap and the commissions. But going back to FFAR and the FIFA Agents platform, one thing that some may have noticed recently, and it refers back to something we mentioned on a few occasions in previous episodes, and specifically the agents directory on there. Now, we highlighted the omission of English and Scottish agents from the directory. And that was strangely rectified a couple hours after we published that episode raising that point. But we did continue to question why we could find no German agents on there, and we still can't. But it also seems, after we laboured the point, and others have, on further episodes of the Agents Angle, there now conveniently appears to be a note on the FIFA Agents platform and the directory that states, from FIFA, and I will read it verbatim, "Football agents domiciled in Germany will not be listed in this directory as long as the interim injunction remains in force." This has prompted a couple of questions and observations from me, and I'm sure it has from quite a few people. Although I can appreciate FIFA's logic in having such a notice on there, given the injunction in Germany and also subsequently the €150,000 fine that FIFA have already received from the German authorities for apparent breaches relating to the injunction. But I have to ask, would it be better to list those German domiciled agents on the register but put the notice of the injunction next to their listing rather than just omit them completely from the register? Have the agents omitted paid their fee to FIFA, and are they recognised as licensed, even if they're not listed? Are FIFA potentially damaging these agents' standing and reputation by omitting them from the listings? What happens if a German domiciled agent is seeking to operate elsewhere, say Australia, South America, Japan, where the FFAR are operational, either in full or in part, and a potential client wants to check their license status? They can't effectively do that via the FIFA Agents platform and the register, which is what it's meant to be for. And still, we are no clearer on this link to Germany definition. If we take this notice as a clue as to what is meant by a link to Germany, is it a question of whether an agent is domiciled and not anything else in FIFA's eyes?
I think you make two important points here, Jonathan. The first one is German agents or agents based in Germany and are doing business in other countries may want some reflection of their status and their status is not available on the FIFA agents portal on the directory, then how do you confirm that they are able to work under the FFAR outside of Germany? That's very clear. It's a branding issue. It's a status issue. It is a concern. In terms of the German link, I think at the end of the day, domicile is a very interesting concept. I know they use it a lot with tax offices around the world. It's a similar criteria here where if you're a resident or domicile within a country or you're recognized as such, and you may not have always living there during the year, they always look at the link. So domicile is a very interesting concept, and especially in tax matters, it's seen very seriously. Also, some people who may want to use the German link in order to avoid the FFAR, there's also a danger in there. They have to be very careful because, as we've seen in previous episodes, and I've gone through quite a few national football agent regulations, several of the national federations can assess a transfer and decide if there's a national link as well as an international link and decide whether their regulations apply to that agent, even though they may even be a German citizen or domicile or whatever. And Belgium and Sweden come to mind with this. So it's not that easy. If I've just got a German link and I do a deal maybe in Belgium and Sweden, I'm immune from the FFAR or the national football agent regulations. So we need to be very careful the way you deal with the German link. But I also agree that there needs to be more clarity about why this is happening with German agents.
Absolutely. Yes, we recognize there have been bugs and technical glitches in the FIFA agent platform for the registration process, the agent register, as we're mentioning, even the CPD elements, and there continue to be issues. There always is with technology and IT. But as I said in the intro, is this now more of an admission than an omission? All I ask is that we all need clarity in this. FIFA, just start being a bit more transparent on this and being transparent on the issues, the problems and the decisions. It doesn't help anyone because we have enough problems with FFAR currently that arguably stem from poor communication. And thus, such supposed bugs and then quick resolutions when people ask questions publicly will start to appear less of a coincidence.
You probably need updated circulars to update any technological issues or even a short newsletter to agents saying these are some of the issues on the portal. I mean, you've got a little bit of confusion of which is the license number, as there seems to be two on the system. One when you go deeper into the directory and one when you go into your password and you open up the agent's portal and you see another number. I actually got asked this question by an agent based in Southeast Asia who asked me, which is the license number? So there is a little bit of confusion, Jonathan, and I think maybe it's time maybe for a newsletter to come out, but also we have the upcoming Football Agents Working Group. I believe it's in Saudi Arabia in mid-December. And I think some of these issues, especially technical issues, even the German link issue should be addressed there so that information can be disseminated to the wider agent community.
I think it does come down to that communication and making it more effective. But when you've got a platform where there's some confusion over what sort of ticket to register a ticket to get support, that says it all. But just moving away from FFAR and the drier regulatory topics for the moment, and something I need to clarify for my wife and kids. I haven't been playing an advanced copy of Football Manager 2024 for fun at various points over the last few weeks, despite what they suspect. It is purely research for this show. Honestly, it is. It's safe to say I learned my lesson many years ago and that the likes of Football Manager and Sensible Soccer are probably two of the reasons I didn't do as well at college or university or school than I should have. Now, the reason why it is research rather than grounds for possible divorce in this case is that in the latest version of Football Manager, which I believe comes out tomorrow at the time of this episode of The Agent's Angle is released for anyone interested, and we aren't working on commission for anybody who thinks so, is that it now quite heavily involves intermediaries in the gameplay. And the actual release that came with this from the development company, which is Sports Interactive, was introducing intermediaries and offloading players. Now, in previous versions of the game, I think agents were more of a storyline feature, but in this version, it is apparently far more strategic elements, which I think demonstrates the recognition of the key role agents play in football in the real world. Now, we have a long-standing mutual friend who has in-depth knowledge of the football industry and agency world, who now actually works for Sports Interactive, the game's developers. So we're hoping someone will come on the show to explain how they researched the agent's role for the game and built it into the actual gameplay. But understandably, with this launch at this time, they're very, very busy. But some initial observations from me after dabbling with the game, it refers to intermediaries, not agents. So some people might think this is a slight oversight in the terminology. I don't think it is. I think they've shown a massive understanding for the roles of different intermediaries and agents in the football world, whether they be brokering deals, acting as player agents, even unlicensed third parties, and they've integrated those elements into the game. Secondly, the role of the agents in the game is now multifaceted. They're representing selling clubs, they're representing buying clubs, they're representing players in a variety of ways. And they also interact with various characters in the game, not just the gamer as the manager. There's sporting directors, directors of football. As I mentioned, when these features were announced, they phrased it as introducing intermediaries and offloading players. Now, offloading players is a not too flattering term to use, but it is somewhat accurate in what clubs want from agents at times in offloading unwanted players. Gamers as managers can even go over the agent's head or behind their back. Of course, that never happens in real life, does it, Peter? As if it never happens. And you can judge from the laughter there of what we both think of that element. They can seek agents' advice on transfer. They can offer out to all intermediaries the opportunity to offload players, dare I say, some form of mandate, which we've discussed before. Again, all part of the real agent world. Now, another thing that's actually included is transfer room. It's an interesting addition. I think it's more part of a partnership with Sports Interactive to be part of the game, albeit it is just really a button at the moment to make transfers easier in the game. But I think they are developing that use of transfer room further. Now, I haven't got too deep enough into the gameplay to see if there are any agents or intermediary names I recognise. I haven't noticed anyone yet, so I don't think agents can go searching for themselves on the game just yet. So overall, I would say Sports Interactive have probably demonstrated more understanding of the practicalities of the football agent industry and the role agents have with this than many of the actual football authorities, if not even FIFA, with part of the FFAR. Although, when acting for a club in the game, it is capped at 10% of the transfer fee.
I think based on this and these observations, Football Manager as a game is trying to provide an authentic experience, and they're adding that element of using agents or intermediaries, as you mentioned, for a better transfer market insights. So when transferring, purchasing players. You mentioned there's a feature on a quick chat with a player's agent as well, and whether you can trigger interest. So all this is quite interesting. I think it also adds a little bit of drama, maybe. Because having seen the article that mentions this, it talks about Football Manager, any actions you take, including dealing with the agent, will have consequences. So it's quite interesting. I think it's just trying to make it realistic. But also what we've been saying on the podcast, bringing in a live experience of the transfer market. It also mentions transfer room in this game. Transfer Room, which is a player broking platform that's now really taken a big role in the transfer market and dealing with agents and clubs. I think we need an episode on Transfer Room and how they are affecting the agents and broker intermediary market. I do say broker as a transfer room mouth, but they bring parties together, but also they do research and analysis of player positions. For instance, I actually saw a recent transfer room information where they provide data on the demand of players in certain positions by clubs and what's the in-demand age profiles. So maybe that integration into the game is important, and that's why there's a collaboration there, Jonathan.
I think it's safe to say at the moment, transfer room's a bit of a Marmite, or shall I say Vegemite subject in the football agent world. Either people love it or hate it. It's similar in a way to the various statistical platforms such as YScout and Instat. Everybody has their preferences as part of their agent's role. For me, the jury's still out on transfer room, as there's some questionable issues, whilst also some good points with the platform and the offering. And I hear good and bad from other people. But just referencing back to Football Manager game briefly, and another interesting addition is the addition of many new leagues from around the world. And one of those is Japan, with the inclusion of J-Leagues 1, 2, and 3, as well as the game actually being available in Japanese as an in-game language. I did find it quite surprising that after 20 editions of the game, it is only now that J-League has been included. But it's great that they recognise the importance of the sport there, the influence of the J-League, the language, and that football is a worldwide game.
Yes, I'm based in Australia. Japan is seen as one of the key markets in Asia. And now we turn to our special guest. It's a market that we've wanted to cover on this podcast, and Japan being one of the most interesting markets, a market that's really provided a lot of good football players into Europe, a market that's really interesting from the agent's perspective and how deals are done there in terms of the J-League. I want to introduce our guest. His name is Yuki Mibuchi. He's from Imagined Law Firm. He's the attorney at law, and he's also a FIFA football agent. He completed the FIFA Executive Program in Football Agency earlier this year. He's a sports agent with 15 years of experience, as well as being a FIFA Players Agent from 2008. He's currently an agent who represents Japanese players into Europe, Asia, and my market, Australia, not to mention domestic-related contracts in the J-League, J1, 2, and 3. Yuki, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for my introduction, and I'm honored to be joining your podcast. Thank you.
You've got a very varied background, Yuki, in terms of your experience being a lawyer and an agent, but also in a very exciting and interesting market, Japan, of course. We recently saw many agents around the world sit the FIFA football agent exams in 2023. Are you aware of how many Japanese candidates sat the exam in April and September this year? And how many FIFA licensed agents there are now in Japan, considering that FIFA has also now released the names of the agents who are registered on its portal?
Yes. In April session, I heard 87 applicants sat the exam and 35 people passed. And in September, I'm not sure the exact number, but I found the Japanese football agent license holder in agent platform, at least 18 people. So for me, the legacy pass football agent license holder is about 30 people. The total in Japan, there are about 70 people now.
70 people. Is that around about the same as when the regulations of working with intermediaries were in place, or is it much less now?
Yeah, much less, because a registered intermediary in Japan is about 400 people. So now it's only the 70 agents.
Wow, quite a big decrease. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Japanese agents could not study the exam in their own language. They need to take it in the three languages, French, Spanish, and English. Would most have prepared in English, you would have thought, in terms of the candidates for the FIFA football agents exam?
Yeah, I had, and it's my opinion, the candidate studied by themselves by using the FIFA study materials. And I think for Japanese, the language is very big issue and problem. So the candidate was likely to DPL, that is a translation application, but the translation, the meaning is a little bit bad in English, Japanese. So they lose the point due to the bad translation.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because that would have happened in quite a few different markets where, say, English or the other two languages I mentioned were not official languages, yeah. And people didn't speak one of those languages fluently, not just spoke it, but understand reading it, which is very, very important. The FIFA football agent regulations.
Yeah.
How do the football participants, the agents importantly, because we're an agents podcast, but also clubs, players, and even the Japan Football Association, how do they feel about these new FIFA football agent regulations?
That is a very good question, I think. For us, agent, the big problem is reduction of commission, as you know. And for players, they might be happy to new rule because they don't pay much more commission. And for Japanese club, many Japanese club has struggled because if the Japanese club cannot pay the 10% of the commission, that Japanese club can't introduce the foreign agent of the foreign club to Japan very good talent. So they have a very struggles.
In terms of the FFAR, do you think it's going to change the way the agency business is conducted in Japan?
The for agency, originally, Japanese agency, the commission is average 10%, 8% to the 10%. But after introduction of the FFAR, as you know, up to the 5 or 3% of the commission, so the differences of this commission will be make up the other service. But all of agency is looking for the how treat the other service or manage. This is a very important problem, I think.
All the national associations, including the Japanese Football Association, can introduce national football agent regulations. Having done some research on a lot of the national football agent regulations, is there any regulations that the Japanese Football Association has introduced which differs a little bit from the FIFA football agent regulations?
The Japanese Football Association is adopted FFAR almost completely. So there is now 3 or 4 exceptions of the FFAR. It is prohibited that agent or agency can't receive commission from the club if the football agent contracted with the player. And the next example is that the duration of the club agent in FFAR, there is no limit. But in Japanese Football Association, the duration of the club agent contract is up to 2 years. There is two examples of the exception.
The agents industry has changed quite a lot for everybody over the last, not just the last 5 years, but also the last 10 years. Can you just give us some insights on how the agent profession in Japan has changed over the last 10 years?
As you know, in 2015, FIFA abolished the pharma agent license system and introduced the intermediary system. In Japan also, there were lots of intermediaries registered in the Japan Football Association, but there is no guarantee of that intermediaries because there is no license exam. So the player can or could change the intermediary very rapid, half of a year, within 1 year, within 2 years. And I think that is a player's risk. So in FFL, the introduced agent license system, there is a guaranteed minimum agent quality. So that is very good for the player to choose which agent is more effective or high quality. So these 5 or 10 years, the intermediary or agent quality is very low in Japan, I think.
Yuki, many listeners and international agents are intrigued by the J-League and also Japan with its rich culture and traditions. What are the challenges for foreign agents negotiating player contract deals in Japan? Do they need a Japanese partner to do that? And are there any tips you would give to agents or our listeners who want to operate in Japan in terms of being able to operate there effectively?
First of all, the foreign agent want to deal with the Japanese market should contract with a solid and confident Japanese local agent. That is a very good solution, I think. The second question, I want to say that there is a cultural difference of the Japan and other foreign countries. So if the foreign agent have not visited in Japan before, they come to Japan and see and look at the J-League and the Japanese culture and the football style. That is a very short resolution, I think. Success resolution. And I think CB constructs of lots of the photographs and video link. the video consists of lots of penalty goals, tricky, but that is meaningless for the Japanese club. Japanese club wants to see the whole games. If the player is a striker, not only the goal scene, but also the third point of the attacking brief statement would be better for the Japanese clubs, and not much more photograph. Japanese club dislike that kind of TV.
You mentioned cultural, and in terms of negotiate a deal in Japan, if there's interest in the player, is the agent expected to turn up to Japan, of course, and to negotiate that deal? And are player deals negotiated quickly in Japan, or is it more of a six-month negotiation, or does it just depend on the club, the coach, and the player and the agent involved?
It's likely to be not so short conversation, but it takes a lot of time, I think, because Japanese is very careful culture. So the Japanese club, of course, they have to check the video clip. Then the Japanese club scout go to that country and feedback to the club and talk with all of the, including the director and the board member. So there is a lot of steps to acquire the foreign players. So it takes a long time, I think. Yeah.
Yuki, we had a conversation back on episode 3 or 4 with Colin Gordon, a British agent, and he spoke about many years ago his involvement in the move of Hidetoshi Nakata to Europe. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of Japanese players now coming to Europe and moving to other countries and having a really big impact. Is there one story from your experience, may involve yourself or an associate of yours, where there's been a Japanese player and they've got that significant international move just with the help of Japanese agents and local agents?
Yeah, that is the opposite story I've mentioned for foreign agent to want to work with the Japanese agent. For example, for our company, we have a Dutch agent and a German partner, so at the other countries also. Japanese agent can't negotiate with the European club alone, so that we have to find a suitable partner in the Europe. That is our success.
There are, obviously, we mentioned there are a lot of talented Japanese players moving to Europe. Japanese agents, as you mentioned, need to partner up with European agents to navigate and operate in the European transfer market. From your experience in dealing with colleagues, Japanese agents, are there any problems or frustrations that Japanese agents encounter internationally when moving players, say, into Europe or even into Asia? Are there any frustrations in the way things are done there that Japanese agents are not used to?
This is not for me and also the other Japanese agent. If we manage to the transfer to our client to Europe, then lots of European agents contact our clients, and some clients with the local agent directory. And there is a frustration because lots of time and lots of money in order to transfer our client to Europe. But then the client dream came true. Then we are switched off. There is our frustration. And we think it might be normal thinking for the player. The player wants to talk local agent because that is a strong point of the local agent with local club. Because our Japanese agent has a disadvantage of the language. That is because the player wants to contract or redirect the local agent. I understand that situation, but that is very difficult and a problem. Yeah.
Yuki, we've traditionally seen many Brazilians and Spanish players coming to Japan amongst other nationalities. Yeah. Recently, we're seeing players from Thailand, Vietnam, even Indonesia and some other Southeast Asian leagues. Are Japanese clubs giving their agents a wider mandate to look for talent now in Asia? Or is this more to do with the trend that the Japanese Football Association has a memorandum of understanding with a lot of the ASEAN countries? And for our listeners, the ASEAN countries are mainly the Southeast Asia countries like Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, Vietnam, some of the countries I already mentioned. Are Japanese clubs finding talents in this region, or is it more to do with the arrangement between the Japanese FA and the ASEAN countries in order to develop their players?
I'm not sure exact things, but it's my opinion. The ASEAN agent wants to introduce their local client to the Japan, and the Japanese agent also seeking a chance to introduce the ASEAN countries' players, such as Thailand, Vietnamese, to the Japan. So the main person is the agent start to the transfer, I think. Because of the partnership of the J-League and the ASEAN companies, J-League gives money to the Japanese club if the Japanese club contracted with the ASEAN players.
Before we wrap up, a lot of listeners and agents are interested in what type of players, in terms of style, athleticism, do they have to be technical or tactical? Do Japanese clubs, J-League 1, and even J-League 2, and even the Women's League, what kind of players are they looking for? Are they looking for fast, technical? Is it characteristics, behavior, hard work? And I don't want to generalize because I know you can't, but just in terms of a template, what type of players would they be interested in?
The first, the playing style is strong if the player is foreigner, because Japanese player is very skillful and fast, very good dribbling skill. So if the Japanese club wants to get a foreign player, the player must have strong power. Not only the strong power, but also the very fast speed. Character is have a sympathy with the Japanese culture and polite behavior, working hard, study hard, Japanese language, Japanese culture.
And finally, what would be your one wish relating to the football agents industry, Yuki, going forward?
If the agent works very hard and a very good result to their client, but the income of the agent is very cheap, that is unfair, I think. It is important for our market to reimburse the correct evaluation for the agent. If not so, some agent quit their business in near future. That is a very terrible thing, I think. The only I dislike this FFAL structure is a commission cap.
And I think a lot of other agents from around the world agree with you. Yuki, thank you for coming on. Thank you for giving us a Japanese insight into the J-League, but more importantly, the agents industry and how it all works. And it's a very fascinating space. It intrigues a lot of people from around the world because we see the Japanese national team doing so well. We see players just really at another level. And just the technical player development from juniors all the way through, fascinating. Jonathan, any final thoughts before we close off?
No, nothing from me, Peter. Like, my first knowledge of J-League was way back with Gary Lineker and Nagoya Grampus 8 and his broken toe. But the number of players that are now coming over, I think it's Mitoma at Brighton, is looking an exceptional player. And there's so much talent coming over and so much development. And as you pointed out, the players have a different style. And that different style just accentuates their value. It just makes them so much more valuable. So, Yuki, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And just for clarification, that was myself on that interview and not some clone of Barry White from an alien world. Or if you were worried your audio was playing up. Unfortunately, when we did that interview last week, I had a pretty bad cold.
I think we're showing our age, Jonathan. Barry White, the dulcet tones, that deep voice that really captured the imagination of a lot of people. I just want to go back to Yuki and just summarize some of Yuki's messages and observations about the Japanese market and Japanese players. I think Yuki emphasized the importance of the relationship with Japanese agents if completing a transaction in Japan. So anyone from outside Japan who wants to deal in the Japanese market needs to form a relationship with a Japanese agent. The localized agent is very important. Vice versa, Japanese agents need European agents to facilitate deals. And we've seen that a lot of players coming from Japan now, as they always have, but now it seems a very special cohort. European agents are needed on the ground to facilitate those deals and to assist the Japanese agent in the negotiation. Japanese clubs, they recruit with patience. They do their full scouting and background checks, and they have a certain style or technical elements the players need to fulfill. So very particular there. They're not random. They don't rush. You need to have patience when dealing with clubs before they make a final decision in Japan. Yuki also mentioned the reduction in the number of Japanese agents who will be working in Japan. It's very difficult for a lot of Japanese agents to sit an exam in English. That can be a legal or technical exam. And finally, just like everywhere around the world, Japanese agents are concerned about the commission caps. And that makes it very difficult to operate, especially in a competitive market like Japan. But overall, Yuki gave us some great insights in the whole Japanese market. Now, I'm going to do a little bit of national football agent regulations, the NFAR, as we call it, which complements the FIFA football agent regulations, the FFAR. So some listeners who may be new, be using a few acronyms, just want to explain what those acronyms are. I'm going to focus on two countries, Colombia from South America and Austria in Europe. So I'll just focus briefly on Colombia. They've got their regulations on football agents of the Colombian Football Federation. Not a huge variance here, but two, three little differences. We know that in South America, and this is also covered in the FIFA football agent regulations, agents cannot participate directly or indirectly in bridging transfers by using a club between the buying and selling club to move players. Now, we know that FIFA has banned that under its RSTP, but also Colombia has its own statute which dealt with bridge transfers, and any deal within Colombia that involves a bridge transfer by putting a player temporarily in a club, so then you can avoid other maybe compensation, solidarity, and then use that to go to the new club is seen as illegal. And they've got a statute in Colombian football and have pretty much stipulated that in the national sphere, any agent who engages in a bridging transfer will get themselves in trouble. Now, another interesting little change in terms of the Colombian regulations is that in terms of representation contracts, that they regulate representation services not related to specific transactions. So in Colombia, the Federation looks at representation contracts, not just the ones that relate to representation services, but ones that relate to other transactions. So if the client, being the player or coach, or even the club, is registered in the territory of Colombia, then they would look at other transactions that arose from that contract. And finally, with Colombia, they actually define, which I haven't seen before, amateur and professional club status. They actually, in their definition section, have, for example, the Di Mayor, which is the major division of Colombian soccer. They refer to professional clubs and professional athletes, but also refer to amateur clubs and amateur athletes and any agents who engage with either. So they make that differentiation. That's quite interesting. Now I'll turn our attention quickly to Austria and the Austrian rules for football agents, as they call it. They have an Austrian federation, the OFB, has a platform which is digitally operated. And this is interesting, where only clubs have access to this platform, and the clubs, whenever they use football agent services or they do something on behalf of a player, they need to lodge all that information on the Austrian Football Association platform. I haven't seen that much in other national football agent regulations. And finally, the Austrians Football Federation sets out, obviously, there might be some violations of regulations by agents working in the Austrian leagues or Austrian Federation. Now, they've actually specified the punishments that they will have on clubs, football agents, or players. So, for example, if a player or coach violates their agent's regulations, they can be punished with a warning, a ban from competitive games, or a fine up to 50,000 euros. If a club violates the regulations, the same thing, up to 50,000 euros, a transfer ban, deduction of points, and or forced regulation. And then they've got one for football agents operating in Austria. Anyone who violates the provisions of the Austrian football agent regulations can be punished with a warning, a fine up to 50,000 euros, or a ban between 3 and 24 months. So they actually specify what would be the punishments. Now, we're talking about Austria. We know that they have got a team in the Champions League, RB Salzburg. And now, Jonathan, I want to refer to something a bit lighter in the sense of the business. We saw an article It's actually more of a snapshot article by Facts Consultancy. It's entitled The 10 Best Represented Agents in the UEFA Champions League. This report sets out 10 different top agencies who have the most players in the Champions League. We've got number one, just a few. Jorge Mendes's agency, 32 players. We've got Seed Creative Artists Agency Stella, 31. Wasserman, 23. I won't go through them all. Roof, the German agency, 18. We've got creative art agency Base, 16. And the major Spanish agency, You First, with 10 players. So this is quite interesting. I don't know what you think of this publication, Top 10 Agencies, Jonathan.
Facts Consultancy come out with some really interesting stuff and some reports and snapshots that really grab your attention. Now, you know I can't resist going through things like this, critiquing them and at times picking them apart where I can. In fact, I'm starting to think you send me these broad statistical representations and snapshots just to wind me up, Peter. So I have quite a few questions and observations based on this chart and the representations it makes. Now, the first thing is, I'm presuming this is referring to the group stages of the competition of the Champions League, and it's not including the qualification paths. Is Gesta Fute really top, or is CAA top with 47 players, as effectively Base and Stella are the same stable now? They form under the same corporation. And even Jonathan Barnett, I heard state publicly at an event, he works with Leon Angel now. And I'm confident in saying they would collectively claim top spot over Jorge Mendes and Gesta Fute, depending on when, where, and the context in which you ask. I would say with a lot of these agents, it's very much about being at the top of the tree. However, that is calculated. The other thing is, how is the count measured with variations such as multiple agents and agencies representing the same player, the agency representing the club, the player changing representation during the course of the competition, changes to the squad in the competition, and even an agent changing agency? That can affect it. How reliable is the data? What is the source of this data? Have they seen the contract of every player in the Champions League to establish who the agent is or the agency? What happens if the player agent cannot be identified? Are they just eliminated from the table? Now, this is one table, so we don't know the backup information around this. It's probably a very complex report out there. Could the presence of HCM and ProStar be explained by the participation of Turkish and Ukrainian clubs, respectively, in this year's Champions League? For me, it'd be interesting to see how these figures compare once at the knockout stages with arguably the better players and the bigger clubs left in. Does this data just include the List A Champions League players, which is approximately 800, or List B also, which changes before each and every match and can include some very talented players under the age of 21? Like, I'm thinking just off the top of my head, Yamin Lamal at Barcelona. He's featured in the Champions League. He could actually be a List B player. And that List B is unlimited in effect. Now, my maths isn't the best, but I estimate this top 10 is roughly 22% if we are talking those registered List A players at the group stages. And in that, I was actually surprised by the numbers. I was expecting maybe 25 to 50% more for each of those agencies, given the number of players we're talking about, the squads and the influences and the level of influence some of those big agencies have. And there were a couple of names of agencies I would have expected to see on the list, but they aren't present. The other thing I'd be interested to see is a breakdown of player nationalities in the Champions League and how that correlates to these agencies, as well as how the teams and squads break down between the agencies. For example, with four English clubs in the competition, do Base, Stella and USG dominate the English club squads? Does Gesta Fute dominate the three Portuguese club squads? Do Roof and USG, because USG is technically an Anglo-German agency now, do they dominate the four German club squads? There's so many questions. Interesting table, interesting to see that influence and for people to get a picture of where the influence lies in the agents industry in the Champions League. But there's a lot of questions that are generated by that information. And obviously, there's probably a pretty in-depth report out there somewhere.
Yeah, I think that there would be a report that you cross-reference, but you're right. These questions are very valid because where do you get that information from? Especially now that players are moving agencies, a lot of players are trying to do deals themselves. And then you've got a situation where you've only got 2 years with players, so there could be some movement on that regard. But I will say this. We know the super agencies have about 50 to 60, maybe 70 clubs as key clients. And most of these clubs are in the European Champions League. So there's a corollary effect there where they've got a lot of the top players playing in those leagues. So it's likely that this table has some veracity. We also see, as you mentioned, German, Turkish, Ukrainian agencies in the top 10. And this may also correlate to the number of clubs from these countries in the European Champions League. The Ukrainian agency, for instance, may represent a lot of the players in the Ukrainian club in there. You also mentioned Leon Angel and Jonathan Barnett. I just want to make it clear for some of our listeners who should know, most agents, we all know who Leon Angel is at base, and Jonathan Barnett is one of the super agents. They're very big agents in England and obviously have a lot of influence in terms of the league there. But very interesting questions, Jonathan. I think that these kind of reports really make us reflect, ask the hard questions, but also very intriguing for not just agents, but the fans and everyone out there of what agents do and how powerful they can be in the transfer business.
I think these matters need scrutiny. Like, it's lacked scrutiny for so long on where the influence is. And it could be a legitimate influence. It could be an illegitimate influence. But most of the people involved in football want fair competition. They want to see that, pardon the pun, the level playing field as such. And there is actually a related article that has come out this week to the topic of agency influence. And this is in another big football competition, the English Premier League. And the article's by Dan Sheldon, one of Matt Slater's colleagues at The Athletic. And this one looks at the frequency that agents are utilised by Premier League clubs in deals. It's entitled, Which Agent Does Your Premier League Club Deal With Most Often? It's from the 29th of October, as I said, by Dan Sheldon in The Athletic. And personally, I think a lot of the recent interest, not just in this article, has been fueled by the scrutiny that Erik ten Hag and Manchester United have received over an alleged close connection to an agent there. And this article actually starts off by talking about that relationship, maybe because it's Manchester United and they are always newsworthy, the size of the club, the exposure they get around the world, the fan base, and they generate huge interest. However, the whole issue of, shall we say, preferred agents is nothing new, whether it be fair practice built on trusted relationships or arguably something more nefarious going on and potential for conflicts of interest. Now, when I first saw this article, I got quite excited and thought, at last, someone's going to scrutinise this and raise awareness. And although it's a welcome article, sorry, The Athletic, I have to admit, I was largely underwhelmed by it. As with that table for agents in the Champions League we just spoke about, there are so many variables to take into account. But the fact that the likes of The Athletic and Facts Consultancy are looking at this should receive credit for the scrutiny they're giving to it. I used to scrutinise these declaration documents from the English FA and some other associations every year and try and identify the anomalies, the relationships, the patterns, as I know others did also. So I'm not the only saddo out there who's looking at these things regularly. I've actually said for a long time that you can come up with more questions about what is actually missing from the declarations rather than what is actually there and declared. This article from The Athletic does some scrutiny, but it really just scratches the surface and gives a snapshot again, and could also be open to a hell of a lot of assumption and misinterpretation. But rather than looking at the minutiae of the article, there are a few standout things I noticed. I already knew them pretty much, but they are worth mentioning at this time. And I don't know what you think of these. Some of these details go back quite some way, and the industry changes so quickly. There's 3 years of transaction data used here, going back to 2019, if not even longer indirectly. So this is a very limited analysis of such a lot of data. And some of the players actually mentioned in it have actually retired. That's how far back it goes. The article seems to focus primarily on the big agencies, which is understandable, as they do most of the Premier League deals or are involved in some way. The variations in interchangeable use of terminology, such as brokered, an agent brokered a deal, they represented the player. And as such, could there be confusion as to the roles the agents perform for the clubs in question? And also, if there's anything untoward happening, There's cases listed in here of agents and intermediaries working for clubs that formerly employed them as employees, whether they be scouts, sporting directors, or whatever. That's nothing new either. And multiple agents representing the same player in a transaction. Neither of those things are anything new, as we will know. And finally, and I've got to mention this, the club I've followed all my life is on there, and they've got quite a lot of scrutiny over their well-known association with a certain agent and agency. But in my opinion, I think this article misrepresents that relationship and the agents and club in question by saying it dominates the transaction list. I've looked at it over many years now. It's my club. It's the industry I'm involved in, and it's where I pay particular interest. And I would say the agents and agency involved doesn't dominate the list in the declarations and hasn't done for some time in the way I would have expected it to do so. So again, I come back to the fact that I think it generates more questions from the omissions from the data in the report than it does from the inclusions.
You know more about it than me, and your observations are probably on the mark. I found this article quite interesting by Dan Sheldon. I believe there's some research done here. It's fascinating how he angled it in the sense of which Premier League club deals with which agent most often. Now, we know that the concept of preferred agents is big in the agents world, where clubs prefer certain agents. But also, from my experience, from agents outside Europe, a lot of times when we're trying to do deals, in particular, sometimes in England, that foreign agents are told that they may need to deal with a club agent to broker the deal. So that's quite common. So if you want to engage with a big club, another agent may be coming on board as part of the negotiation or the brokering, as this word's been used by Dan Sheldon in this article. I went through the article, and I mean, we know that Guardiola and Ten Hag are both represented by SEG, the Sports Entertainment Group, that Dan Sheldon, who wrote this article, has, I think, hit the nail on the head in the sense of it is common for football clubs to have favoured agencies when they're needing to sign or sell a player. And he mentions a leading recruitment figure at a former Premier League club, but obviously on the condition of anonymity, so we don't know who that figure is. But the quote pretty much outlines what this article is about, and I quote, "It is impossible to ignore the biggest agencies because of the volume of players they represent, but another reason clubs will rely on a small pool of agents is down to trust." So in terms of clubs doing business, they do have sometimes a preference, especially the bigger clubs, for certain agencies, because those agencies also have the portfolio of players. We always need to remember that. And you mentioned about the data may have been a bit old. The Athletic, in this article, has analysed the English Football Association's intermediary transactions from 2019 all the way to 2022. That's quite a, I would say, wide. There's three seasons of data. Yes, the data's not always right, Jonathan, and I agree with you. It has to be scrutinised. We know CAA Base, ICM Stella at the time, they are frequently used by clubs. And overall, the article does show the power of these agencies.
Yeah, I actually think we'll start to see a few more articles like this and this level of scrutiny. Well, I hope so, especially with the representation of coaches and managers now coming under the agent regulations. This build-up of relationships between agents and clubs is, I would say, it's not dissimilar to the relationship you build up in a business with a preferred supplier. You know the relationship, you know the way they work, and I would say a large proportion are actually legitimate relationships like that. Where it needs further scrutiny is where they're not legitimate relationships. Also, with the FFAR and FIFA, we're going to get this enhanced reporting, or so we're led to believe, with increased transparency with FIFA. It still isn't clear what that will be and what level it will go to, and only time will tell in what will be delivered and what level of transparency and scrutiny that will provide. Yes, it's an interesting article, and I think from speaking to Matt a couple of episodes ago about Dan's work on the agents aspect, there's a lot of catching up to do. There's a lot of work for one person to go through. And I think we're going to see more scrutiny from the Athletic, from Dan, Matt and the team there, as they drill down a bit deeper and focus on the more recent and refined data pools that we'll probably get from FIFA and the FA in future. But if the media were genuinely interested in this, we would see far more following Dan's approach rather than speculation, and they'd be doing it far more regularly. And this is rather than the annual screaming sensationalism of some in the media over how much has been paid to agents as a collective that is not an accurate representation of the many rather than just the few. But do some of the media really care? They've got to sell subscriptions and papers at the end of the day. The headlines are grabbing. But more importantly, do the football authorities really care? Are they scrutinising this sort of relationship and data to the level that they should be?
Agents are involved in football transfers, the big clubs, the big brands, Champions League, the English Premier League. It's all interesting stuff. And everyone wants to be involved. And we know there are big agencies who do a lot of business. And that intrigues people. And I think this article highlights part of that intrigue. But going back to your point, I think the data will get better as the reporting lines get better. The agent regulatory structure, architecture is building up. So with that architecture building up, there'll be more data, more information, more trends, more understanding of the landscape in more definitive terms. I also think with the combination of the FIFA football agent regulations and the national football agent regulations, especially the compliance aspects, the enforcement aspects, the reporting aspects, that data will probably be better. And that's not because agents need to upload contracts and provide information, but so clubs, players, and coaches also need to provide information and are also regulated by those regulations, as are national football associations around the world. They need to also provide data to FIFA. So everything hopefully will improve, and then we'll have a better and more, I suppose, clearer picture of what's going on. Now, with that, it's time to close our show. Please share our podcast to anyone who may be interested. If you have any questions or topics you wish to discuss, please email us or contact us. The Agents Angle will be attending the European Football Agents Association General Assembly and UBFC Conference next week at Wembley. So we hope to see many agents there, and also possibly from there, invite a few intriguing high-profile agents onto future podcasts. Bye from me.
And hopefully by next week, we'll have a Rule K ruling from England, which should make the landscape a lot clearer. So for this week, folks, take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next week.
The purpose of the Agents Angle podcast is to provide news, information and facilitate discussion on regulatory matters, policies, business trends and issues affecting football agents worldwide. The opinions and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only and should never be considered legal or professional advice. Furthermore, the views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Thank you for listening.